We're ready to have our session now, paper 1B, and we'll be hearing from Rita. So over to you, Rita.
Thank you, Anne. Our empirical research of earnings per share related disclosures identified four areas where we think improvement may be useful to bearers of electronic support. These four areas are the presentation of a single line item, different types of profit participating equity instruments, the reconciliation, and depository receipts. I will discuss provide summary of each of these areas, and at the end of each area, I'll ask for your comments. So paragraph 67 of IAS 33 permits a company to present a single line item when both basic and diluted earnings per share are equal. And before I go further, I hear a lot of background noise. Can I ask if everyone is on mute, please? Thank you. There's some music now as well. Can everyone hear this music, or is it just me?
Ah, that might be the music in my house, because I'm not muting myself. Rita, I'll just go and tell my husband to stop playing. Okay.
Okay, sorry. That's okay. No problem. I will continue. So the IFRS taxonomy has elements, separate elements for basic and diluted earnings per share. For instance, basic earnings per share loss on continued operations, but the IFRS taxonomy has also...
Okay, Rita. Element. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Anne. That's better, yes. The IFRS taxonomy has also single line items combining basic and diluted earnings per share. For example, basic and diluted earnings per share from continued operations. We think that the use of combined elements makes it more difficult for an investor to query the data. And I've illustrated this here on this slide. Since one company may decide to to present two separate line items when earnings and basic and diluted earnings per share are equal, whereas another company may present just one single line item. The way this will be tagged depends on the presentation. In the first example, the company will use the separate elements. In the second example, the company will use the combined elements. This means that an investor will have to query the data and will have to merge the output. And I personally had to go through this. It's not overly complex, but it acts a complexity that is really not necessary. It also means that in practice, companies have used different approaches when tagging under earnings per related disclosure, such as, for instance, weighted average number of shares. And I've illustrated that on this slide. So we hold the view that, in fact, double tagging rather than the use of combined element is a better XBRL tagging technique. By double tagging, a user only has to handle one set of line items, and the tagging will not depend on a presentation. Double tagging is also consistent with our generally IFRS taxonomy policy, because the fact that a disclosure, two disclosures may be presented in one single line item and in fact are equal can also apply to other things. For instance, the company may not have any minority interest, therefore the profit or loss is attributed to the parent is equal to the profit or loss. We know that our approach or proposal means that the preparers will incur a one-off retagging cost, but we think that disadvantages outweigh the advantages of our proposal. We also propose to add a new element reference that I've here shown on this slide. And we also are suggesting to add an implementation label to the earnings per share related items to make it clear that double tagging should be used when basic and diluted earnings per share are equal. So this brings me to the first set of questions. Do you agree with the proposal to deprecate the elements? Do you agree with the proposal to add a new reference And do you think the addition of a new implementation label is required? Does any ITC member have any objections? Do you agree? Do you have any questions? I see that Ashok is already agreeing. Is there anyone who would like to disagree or...
Yes, Rita, Christine would. Christine, would you like to speak?
Sure. I think from a data consumption point of view, you know, with companies using the combined element, it's really not an issue for us because we know, I mean, it's a finite set of what possible elements that, you know, companies can use. What I fear is this whole double tagging, pattern, because even though I think that if you provide guidance in the taxonomy and you provide implementation notes and whatnot, the question is, will companies actually take note of that and actually implement the double tagging? And if there's any sort of evidence that you have from previous implementations where you've provided tagging guidance, have companies actually followed that? Have you, you know, have you done any analysis on whether companies actually pay attention to the guidance and implementation notes that you make in the taxonomy and in other data other reference sources? And also secondly is with double tagging, would that be an issue with software being able to support that? You know, I see some potential issues if all software vendors are not on the same, page, that this could, add more noise than solve the problem.
Okay, the implementation labels we added to the taxonomy fairly recently, Christine, so it will be very difficult. I cannot point to any particular evidence that we have seen that prepares of following these implementation labels. However, we have provided other guidance kind of documents. For instance, we have the preparers guide, and I know that by talking to preparers, that many of preparers are aware of this guide and try to understand and try to adhere to the guidelines. So you always have the problem that with guidance, some will follow, some may not even notice it. But that shouldn't take away the thing that additional guidance is better. I think regarding software, this is definitely one of the questions we can pose in our proposed taxonomy update document. We were not aware of any software issues, in particular because we have already recommended double tagging in other scenarios, like, for instance, when we published the IFRS 13 common practice update, we already mentioned there that companies should double tag in particular scenarios. And also, it's a problem that does not only exist for earnings per share, it exists for many other disclosure requirements, like it exists for a weighted average number of shares, it exists for basic and fully diluted profit or loss, it may exist for some of the new proposed subtotals in the primary financial statement. So it is a widespread problem, and we cannot continue to solve this problem by just adding more line items. That's what we really want to go out with a proposal that we think double tagging is more useful and in the end will be better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Let's go to Shelley.
Shelley.
Okay. Shelley, would you like to comment?
Not really. I just thought that the observation I'm just making, what proposal is, the explanation provided on slide 11, implementation data, much better, very clear. And so I do not see any issue whatsoever with this kind of the clarity. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Ashok. Shelley, would you like to comment on double tagging?
I think maybe Shelley, I get here a comment that double tagging creates an issue for inline XBRL.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I, I thought, to be honest, I have to admit my XBRL technical knowledge is not that good to be able to respond to this. So I would have to even refer to Owen or bring it back at a later meeting. But I thought it's not an issue. I may be wrong.
Owen, do you want to jump in on this one?
Not particularly. I have to go off. Double check.
Okay. Shelley is not with us at the moment. She's going to reconnect, so that's fine. Binla, do you want to speak?
Thank you, Anne. I just want to express that I support the proposals for the reason that it is reducing the multiple tagging. Multiple approach to tagging, effect from financial statement. I also say that the additional implementation label and references are giving clarity. So yeah, have no issue. Just want to express my support.
Thank you.
Thanks, Binla. Lewis. Lewis, are you there? Would you like to speak to your comment? You have a question. Why does double tagging become a hidden tag?
I think this refers to the issue that Shelley raised about inline XBRL.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think Shelley's back in. Shelley, would you like to speak? Okay, she's maybe not back in just yet.
Okay, John is just on the problem processing.
Okay, John, would you want to speak?
Not especially, just that was an issue in XBRL 1.0, but was resolved in 1.1. Obviously, different regulators have got different perspectives about how they treat double tagging and what they might want to capture, but it is permitted at a technical level.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, John, for that clarification. So I think based on that, we will still go out with a proposed taxonomy update saying that we will encourage the use of double tagging. And then I think that it is also any regulator who may have an issue to tell us why this may not work for us. I don't think, I'm not aware of problems for regulators, at existing regulators at this moment. But again, the proposed taxonomy update will help us to confirm that our understanding is correct.
Okay, Christine, do you want to add anything?
No, I'm just really curious to hear what Shelley has to say, because we are still seeing, you know, double tagging, hidden value type issues, and it causes a problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Shelley, are you back with us? No, still can't hear Shelley. What about Lewis? Lewis, are you there? Okay. No, I don't think we can hear Shelley or Lewis. Apologies for that. And I'll encourage you to correspond directly with Rita, either after the meeting or in response to the document, the consultation. Okay, back to you, Rita.
Thank you. The next topic I want to touch on is different types of profit participating equity instruments. So a company can either have just one single equity instrument that is profit participating, for instance, one class of ordinary share, or they can have multiple equity instruments that are profit participating. Now, these can be ordinary shares with the same or with different profit participating rights, or this can be participating equity instruments, which are not do not classify as ordinary shares under IAS 33. I'll take you first through our proposals for ordinary shares, and then I will touch on a profit participating equity instruments other than ordinary shares. So IAS 33 states that the company must present separately basic and diluted earnings per share for each class of ordinary share that has a different right to share in profit for the period. This is modeled within the IFRS taxonomy through the use of a table. This table includes an axis, classes of ordinary shares, and a company can add extension members to this axis to specify its specific class of ordinary share. IAS 33 also states that the company has to provide, disclose the number and denominator used in the calculation of earnings per share. Within the taxonomy, we have line items for that. However, these line items are not linked to the axis classes of ordinary shares. And in the next two slides, we just have provided an example of how information can be tagged using the existing IFRS taxonomy. So, the IFRS taxonomy has the necessary elements. However, we are still proposing to make a change. And the change is to amend the existing earnings per share table to include the line items depicting the numerator and denominator used in the calculation of basic and diluted earnings per share, and to put this table in the notes earnings per share presentation group. This is a relatively small improvement. However, we think it's necessary because we think it better reflects the combined presentation and disclosure requirements of IAS 33. And we also think that it makes it easier for preparers to use the IFRS taxonomy, because at this moment in time, the line items are located in one presentation group and the axis is located in another presentation group. Just anything that we can do to make it easier for a preparer to find the correct model and find the correct element, we have taken the view that we should do that. So this brings me to my next set of questions. Do you agree with the proposal to amend the existing earnings per share table? And do you agree that we should place this amended table only in the presentation group relating to the notes for earnings per share? Any comments, any disagreements? Okay.
Suzanne, you have a question.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay. It's really minor in a way, but just the table at the, in appendix for this presentation, you want to move out is what you want to move over, and that maps back to the table. The some of those items are maybe all of them have the proposed label changes from the first presentation, right? And those are the same elements, but not with the proposed label changes provided in this table. We just want to be clear.
We thought about that, Suzanne, but we are really saying, so it is the element with the suggested label changes. So it will be like a
Yes, good. That's fine. We got it. That's great. Thank you.
We just had to make a choice. What was easier, assuming that people had already read the label changes, or was it easier to just say, okay, they will go at the taxonomy and they may be confused by us putting in the appendix the label changes?
Okay, we've got a number of members who've indicated their agreement on the chat line. Thank you for that. Do we have any more members who would like to comment on question two? Okay, no. Back to you, Rita.
Okay, so now I will go on profit participating equity instruments which are not classified as other ordinary shares under IAS 33. So IS-33 does not require a company to disclose earnings per share or any other earnings per share related information for profit participating equity instruments that are not ordinary shares. However, when we looked in practice, companies that have issued this type of instrument commonly report earnings per share related disclosures. And this slide provides an example. So in this particular example, the company has provided earnings per share for both the common and preferred stock, and this was disclosed on the primary financial statements. And the notes that they also have disclosed the weighted average number of shares and the profit attributable to both the common and preferred stock. We noticed that in practice, because the IFRS taxonomy does not have elements for this type of information, the companies have used different tagging approaches. Some companies have used extension line items. Other companies have used the existing IFRS taxonomy line item and have used an IFRS taxonomy axis, such as classes of share capital, or even some have used classes of ordinary shares. Now, we think that both approaches have some disadvantages. Approach one, where you have extension line items, it would be very difficult to anchor these extension line items meaningful to an existing IFRS taxonomy element. If I would anchor, for instance, basic earnings per share of preferred stock to basic earnings per share which is applicable to the ordinary share, in fact, it could be even given misleading information to investors. We also think that the use of existing line items is misleading, and because in fact these line items, through their references, through their documentation labels, through even their standard labels, really imply that these line items are only applicable for ordinary shares. And on this slide, I have demonstrated that. So having rejected the current tagging approaches in practice, we also then thought about other things that we should consider when to come up with a proposal. And our first consideration is that these disclosures are relatively rare, meaning they are done, they're only specific to particular countries and within particular countries to particular companies. So whatever we proposed, we really thought we cannot change the existing IFRS taxonomy model that is applicable to ordinary shares, because that would result in a huge retagging and remapping exercise. In addition, we have to consider that, in fact, a profit and loss attributable profit participating equity instruments other than ordinary share is a reconciliation. And later on, we will show that for the reconciliation, we really have favored the approach of using line items. Taking all of this into account, we think that the best way to model these disclosures is to create line items that are very specific to this profit participating equity instrument. And again, on this slide, I provided some examples. Now, we are not proposing to add a new axis types of profit participating equity instruments other than ordinary shares, because in practice, we saw that only very few companies had multiple profit participating equity instruments other than ordinary shares. So my third question to you is, do you agree with our proposal? And if you do not agree, is there any alternative model you would suggest and why?
Suzanne Morsfield, you have a question?
Yeah, maybe it's a bit of a comment, really. I think maybe what, and this goes for the remainder of this topic as well, is what might be really helpful is to have a full disclosure, sort of, if you want to make it before and after is one example, but to have the whole thing kind of, if you will, tag modeled with what your proposal is, to sort of see, because with EPS, as we all know, it's lots of little moving parts. And so if I go back to slide 26 and the example where they've got, you know, basic preferred, but they also have diluted preferred, and sort of just seeing how it actually would fully work across all your new proposals, and maybe even some of the more complex kind of noisier sort of disclosures, to sort of see how it all goes from the primary financial statement all the way to the notes. So I think we might have sort of wondered where, how you would, in quotes, have tagged now the slide 26 examples, to just kind of help clarify that. And I know there's some of that you're trying to do here, but maybe a comprehensive example might help. Is that
okay?
Make sense?
That makes absolutely sense, Suzanne. It's probably my fault. I had underestimated the complexity of this area, and we will, when we write our proposed taxonomy update, we can see if we can include an example that clarifies better how we envision the tagging to work. So thank you for that comment.
Dirk and Ashok have indicated that they agree. If other people also agree with question three, could you indicate on the chat line? And also, if anyone else would like to speak to this question, could you indicate, please? Anna, would you like to speak?
Yes, thank you. I would like to express agreement, and also many thanks to the staff for taking into consideration the anchoring requirement, which is quite ESSA specific. Many thanks, that's very much appreciated. And as I said, I agree with the proposal highlighted in this paper.
Right, thank you.
No, thank you, Anna. And we have to say, it's not only for earnings per share, all the staff, when they now put proposals together, they're really thinking about, okay, if an anchor was used for an extension line item, would that help? Or is there the risk that this anchor may become misleading? Even sometimes where we see, and you'll see it later on, when an item is standalone, so there is no good anchor, that we may even be encouraged to add an element quicker than even for elements that do not necessarily meet our strict criteria for common reporting practice, because one of the criteria of common reporting practice is also that information should be relevant. So investors should be able to understand what is being communicated in an electronic report. So yeah, definitely anchoring is fully on our mind at the moment.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. I have noted it comes up in other papers as well. Thank you.
Good. Ling, would you like to comment?
Hi. I just noted it's not common in architecture. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, I just noted it's not common in IFRS taxonomy architecture. Usually, we will use approach two rather than approach one, because it's difficult for extenders and preparers to fully understand why we use extended line item rather than introduce a new axis. But the staff's explain makes sense. I agree. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And we have to say as well, when we looked at it, we could easily understand why preparers may have used the tagging approach that we have highlighted in it. So it was absolutely not a criticism of what is done. I think our taxonomy did not sufficiently clarify what we thought the best tagging practice to be.
Okay, anybody else would like to talk? Okay, Rita, over to you.
Thank you. So the next topic is reconciliation. So paragraph 70 of IAS 33 says that the company has to provide a reconciliation of the number used in calculation of basic and diluted earnings per share to the profit or loss attributable to the parent entity. A company, IAS 33, also illustrates one of these reconciliation adjustments in an illustrative example, namely preference shares. Now, currently within the address taxonomy, we have modeled this reconciliation as textual elements. So we have here textual elements, explanation of adjustments of numerator and to calculate basic earnings per share, and a similar element for to calculate diluted earnings per share. The reconciliation also includes one monetary reconciliation adjustment, namely the one for preference share dividends, because that was the one which was provided in the example. Based on our proposals for profit participating equity instruments other than ordinary shares, we also will be adding an other monetary element. However, despite having monetary elements for preference dividends and for this other profit participating equity instruments, we still observe that in common reporting practice, companies have instruments other than preference shares and other than this profit participating equity instruments other than ordinary shares. And we have here provided two examples. Here you have an example of a company which on the statement of profit or loss has an adjustment for the profit or loss attributable to other equity instrument holders. And another example is here where a company in the notes provides a reconciliation adjustment for hybrid capital. And similar for the reconciliation for diluted earnings. In practice, companies provide this reconciliation as an adjustment of amounts and provide adjustments specific to particular instruments. So the fact that the IFRS taxonomy has modeled this as textual element means that the companies have to create extensions. And now it's very, very difficult to anchor these extension line items. What are you going to anchor, for instance, let me go back to this hybrid capital dividend payment, which is anchored to the net profit, because that is the, could be argued, is the most wider element. What would you anchor it to? It becomes very confusing and in practice could be very misleading to investors. But irrespective of what is common reporting practice, we also thought that in fact the modeling through textual elements do not best represent the presentation and disclosure requirements of this paragraph, because the paragraph specific relates to amounts, and a textual element is likely not going to meet this requirement. And also we say that the paragraph requires you to do it for each clause of individual instrument. Now, as a data modeler, when I read each clause of individual instrument, I immediately think access. However, because we have noted that this disclosure, this reconciliation adjustment may be presented on the statement of profit or loss, we thought that the use of calculation is a more appropriate modeling technique, at least based on the current XBRL technical specifications. So what are we suggesting? We are just suggesting to add new elements. And we will have a new element that captures all the reconciliation, new monetary element that captures all the adjustments. We also have a new element for this profit participating equity of instruments other than ordinary shares. And then we have one which, to make sure that everything calculates well, we have also a new element for interest and dividends on all other equity instruments. At this moment in time, we are not proposing to add elements for specific instruments, such as, for instance, a hybrid bond or additional Tier 1 capital securities. We need to do some additional research to see what is common and what is not common. However, by having this model, first of all, it's a monetary elements, which is that, which is how companies report it in practice and how the standards require you to disclose it. And secondly, having these elements here provides an anchor to which extension element line items can be linked. And we have followed a similar approach for the reconciliation to diluted earnings, we have here again an anchor element to which all the dilutive impact for individual instruments can be anchored, and then again, additional research in the future may identify specific common reporting practice elements which then fit as children under this new line item. So this brings me to question four. Do you agree with our proposal? And again, if you do not agree, do you have any alternatives that we should consider?
Suzanne, do you have a question?
Again, really quick. It just seems like this makes a lot of sense as a comment, but so calculation ERSO E is that you're envisioning as the anchor point. If you don't see something in B, C, or D that you could use at that point, and then right, I'll ask that, and then I'll pause and ask the second question. Is that the idea? Like E could be the is an anchor.
E could be the anchor. Yeah.
Or in fact,
based on what we have seen currently as common reporting practice, I think D is probably going to be the anchor for these examples I provided in the previous slides.
Yeah.
So but there could be other reconciliation adjustments which do not fit in B, C, and D that you could anchor to E.
Great. And then same with sort of G. I'm sort of stating the obvious. G is for that movement from, you know, kind of basic to dilutive. It just sort of is a great anchor spot for all the variety of things that might show up there. And you'll do further research to see if there are some other common practice things you could add that are quite so general. But for now, this is kind of a good place to start, right? One sort of side question is: is there an investor use case at all, sort of that Nick or somebody had in mind for any of this, or is this like mainly for now, kind of helping solve the anchoring thing in advance, which seems like it really needed, so it seems really wise what you've done.
So far, we have never included in proposed taxonomy investor user cases, Suzanne.
But no, I meant from like our prior ITCG meetings where you bring in an investor use case into the story, and I was sort of wondering if there was one lurking in the background or not, and that's fine if it's not.
I think you could easily see how, because investors may calculate other earnings per share kind of things, and to calculate their other earnings per share, they may want to use it, or they may want to use the starting point just earnings. So it just gives more flexibility. And instead of having to manually review extensions, they have a good starting point to start off with.
Christine, would you like to come in with your question?
Sure. So on the previous slide, you make the point that ideally you would use the class of stock axis to dimensionally qualify these elements, right, to provide, you know, the breakdown as per the class of stock. But what you're suggesting, if I understand correctly, what you're saying is that instead of doing that, companies should be creating extensions and then anchoring these extensions for the different classes of stock to each of these new elements that you're proposing to add. Is that correct?
I think now what they're going, it's going to depend on the regulatory regime. Like at the moment in time, the ones we know best is that really would say the anchoring will happen through extension, linking of extensions to these elements. But if you have regulatory regimes where in fact you do not have to provide calculations of the primary financial statement, then you could also do a linkage through the use of this line item and an axis. Because again, in the end, so anchoring is one particular type of linking. And what investors are looking for is linking, Christine.
Right, but if you are in a particular regime where anchoring is the preferred methodology, is there any constraint to stop companies from still using the class of stock access to dimensionally qualify the element?
I can't respond on behalf of regulators, but what I can say that I'm aware of some regulators, for instance, saying, okay, you should use access in the way they've been envisioned to be used in a particular taxonomy. Or you should not use accesses if they break calculation relationships. Or accesses are permitted. So it's really, it's very difficult for me to give one answer that fits all regulators here.
Yeah, totally understand. And I'm just, so I guess what I'm driving at with my questions is, you know, is this, and this is going to be an interaction between the implementation in a particular regime, right, enforcement, and also what the taxonomy presents. So I think that potentially it could provide two different ways of tagging the same thing. That's all.
Yeah, that's correct. But we still would have this, what would still will happen is that these line items serve as a linking mechanism. In one thing, the linking mechanism will go through an anchor. In the other, it may go through the use of an access.
Okay, any other questions for Rita on this question four?
Okay.
Yes, Ronald.
Yeah, I just noticed in previous slide, there is an example, the adjustments for profit and loss for preference dividends. And just in this calculation, we present a common practice above an example, and I was just wondering why.
No specific reason, Ronald. I can, in the calculation, I can present it, and I think it probably make even more sense to present the example first and then followed by the presentation of the two common practice line items. To be honest, it hasn't occurred to my mind, but I think what you suggest is probably a better presentation.
Okay.
Good. Right. Okay, Rita, over to you for your next section.
Okay. The last topic I want to touch on is depository receipts. So when we did a review of foreign private issuers, we noted that quite a few, in fact, more than 10%, reported ADR-related information. This could be just an ADR ratio, or this could be earnings per share expressed per ADR, like a basic income per ADR or the weighted average number per ADR, or this could be companies providing both the conversion ratio and expression of earnings per share data on an ADR basis. Currently, within the IFRS taxonomy, we have not got any specific element that handles depository receipts, which again meant that in practice, companies have used different approaches to tag the ADR-related information. And on this slide, I have provided the three most common approaches that we saw happening in practice. I think the only thing is that we thought that the tagging approach should not be used, because we thought that, in fact, use of the class of ordinary shares and then indicate as member an ADR, we thought is not completely correct or has some disadvantages, because we felt, okay, an ADR issued by a bank is not an other class of ordinary share. But secondly, you could have a scenario where a company has more than one class of ordinary share, for instance, ordinary share A and B, and then has also an ADR representing each of these two classes of ordinary share, and then you will have an access. We have two members for ordinary shares, two members for ADR, and the relationship between ordinary share and ADR is lost. Having considered this, what we want to propose is to have a new table and a new axis, and this axis will be the types of depository receipts, And members of this axis will be particular types. So that could be an ADR, that could be a GDR, that could be an EDR, that could be any other depository receipts that may be issued by a particular jurisdiction or by a particular regulator. And the line items within this table will relate to our existing line items for ordinary shares. Or if they are profit back if the ADR represent the profit participating equity instrument or an ordinary share, then the line items will be this type, will apply to these line items. Now, you may ask yourself the question, why do we not include within the IFRS taxonomy specific members like the American Depository Receipt, the ADR, GDR, and other, any other? And we discussed that and with our IFRS taxonomy review panel, and we came to the conclusion that this would be not appropriate for us to do. Because first of all, this is really security reference data, and this is not within the content scope of the IFRS taxonomy. Like, we don't include LAIs, we don't include specific classes of ordinary shares that may be issued in particular jurisdictions, we don't include currency codes, we don't include currency country codes within the IFRS taxonomy. So again, although we realize that this information could be very useful to investors and preparers, it's just we cannot include it within the IFRS taxonomy. A second thing is that this types of depository receipts, when we did some research, we realized that there are quite a few different types of depository receipts. These are specific to jurisdictions or a depository program. And again, within the IFRS taxonomy, we only include elements that are common across jurisdictions, because including elements that are specific to jurisdictions has the dangers and the risk that other jurisdictions who do not use this element, it could be confusing. So that's why we only added this axis. And again, this axis could be served as a link, as an anchor to which extension members, either company-specific extension members or jurisdiction extension members could be linked. So this brings me to the last question of this session. Do you agree with our proposal? And if not, what would you suggest and why? Any disagreements?
We've got some agreements coming through.
All agreements so far, that's good. Or bad, I don't know.
Lots of agreements. Any questions for Rita on question five? Yes, Lewis. Hi, Lewis. Hi, Lewis. Are we going to go to Ashok while we're waiting for Lewis? Ashok, comment from you?
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I'm just a simple comment. Are we changing the philosophy of IFRS taxonomy? Because today the buzzword is anchoring. I heard many, many times. So are we really considering when we do any taxonomy revision to really think about anchoring?
Yes, we do. I think not so much for the presentation and disclosure requirements. When we do review extensions, yes, we do. You may recall, Ashok, that in fact, quite early on, when we discussed with the ITCG members extensions, like you remember we had these breakout sessions where we looked at different type of examples. And in fact, the idea of anchoring and linking came out of these sessions, because we really realized very quickly it's not possible to build a taxonomy that can handle all disclosures that a company can provide. And that's why we support the idea of anchoring and linking, and we will, where we it's appropriate, we will consider it. The same as we decide when we build, like I mentioned already, it's linking that we consider. When we decide to include an axis in our taxonomy, often we have said in the past, the use of an axis will minimize extensions and is applicable. There's the same kind of philosophical thinking behind the use of axis.
I'll just ask if Lewis is on the line. Lewis, are you there? No. John?
Nothing to add beyond my comment there. Just supporting Rita's comment about anchoring.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thanks, John.
And also, John, okay. One point, so that's why instead of only using anchoring, I often use linking, because I know that the XBRL International has set up a task force which is looking at extensions and looking at the best technical solution to link extensions, which at the moment, yeah, the only practical solution is anchoring, but it doesn't preclude that in the future other alternatives may come up.
I agree with you, Rita. Obviously, the assistant and global syntactic approach to linking, anchoring, is something that needs to be developed. But as I've said in the comments, for those that are on the call, but maybe not everyone that's watching that can see the comments, from XBRL International's perspective, anchoring conceptually is a very significant improvement. We just think there needs to be some decent data sets, for example, the ESEF data set, before some of that stuff can get finalized. But we're highly supportive.
Thanks, John. I'm just going to ask again whether Lewis has been able to dial in again. While we're waiting for Lewis, Ashok, you have a comment?
Yes, I'm going back about anchoring things. So it would be more beneficial to, you know, the users of the data if the extended tag, which is all this anchoring is all about, would have a definition of that particular, you know, the extension, explaining succinctly what is underlying accounting transaction. That would be more beneficial rather than just linking with, you know, the standard tag, because standard tag for the users is simply saying, it's a part of revenue, for example. So, but that doesn't mean anything to me. I would be really more inclined to have, you know, the proper definition of underlying accounting concept. That would be more beneficial for the users.
I tend to disagree with you here, Ashok. I think, and maybe we can take this discussion offline, but I think through XBRL, the documentation label can provide you more information about the precise meaning of that particular entity-specific element, and the linking provides you, gives you a broad accounting meaning, which can help with comparing across entities. But let's at the moment agree to disagree and take our discussion offline, if that's okay with you.
I hear you. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. John wants to come back in.
No, I agree. It can be dealt with offline, but I agree with what Rita just said.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Suzanne's suggesting that we could have an agenda item on this in the future. Suzanne, do you want to speak to that?
I just wondered if we weren't hitting on something where a bigger discussion might be useful, especially I'm thinking about those kind of combined elements, and it would be helpful to know, you know, where if it's bank loans plus government loans, you know, yes, we all know what, if you anchor it to bank loans or government loans, we know what each of those elements are, but when people combine things, that maybe is a little interesting, shall we say.
So, and that's just one example. So I'm sort of wondering out loud, and in the comment section might be useful at some point for us to have a bigger discussion on anchoring. Mm.
Well, I think it's a good point, and it will be important for ESMA too.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yes, Anna would like to come in. Anna.
Yes, well, just it's interesting to hear all these comments about anchoring. In fact, I think a session on anchoring at some point might be helpful, but we may wish to wait until we actually have some real life examples of what anchoring will mean for issuers. The ESEF, first ESEF reports are not that far into the future, and it might be good to talk about the lessons learned through that exercise when that time comes. And in general, I think anchoring speaks to the philosophy of IFRS standards, where issuers maintain a freedom to disclose and very precise definitions of elements, whilst it would be good to leverage on what anchoring has to achieve. I would be reluctant to try to infer from the anchoring mechanism that we need to have more rule-based standards, because in fact electronic reporting is meant to mirror the freedom that issuers have. It's a tool. It should not be an end in itself. It should not change the way reporting happens, or at least that was never the intention with which ESMA mandated anchoring. Thank you.
Thanks, Anna. Let me ask if Lewis is on the line. No, Lewis, we can't hear you.
I will follow up with Lewis after this meeting to make sure that.
Yes. Okay, Lewis, I'm sorry that we haven't been able to hear you. And Rita will follow up because you had a comment on question five and on question one. Let me just ask if Shelley can speak. Shelley, are you there? I was going to also just ask Shelley about question one, Rita. So perhaps if you could follow up with Shelley as well.
I will do. Thanks, Sam.
All right. We're just bringing this session to a close. Does anybody? Yes, that's Shelley. No, we can't hear you. So as we bring this session to the close, does anybody have any final comments? Rita, anything from you?
No, I appreciate very much all your comments, and we'll come back to you on points you have raised. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Rita. We're now scheduled for a break. We'll be starting at 14:15 UK time. We'll be going to paper 1C with Carlian after our break. So that's 2:15 UK time. So we'll all go off and we'll all mute our microphones and meet again at 2:15 UK time. Thank you.